Welcome to the KMUD News. I'm your news director, April Lewis, and I'm glad to be with you for this broadcast. In this episode, we have stories on helicopters over southern Humboldt and a bee sting that led to a serious local emergency. But first, a rundown of some local headlines, including updates on the bentonite spill, the Covelo Green Bridge collapse, and PG&E's conversations with the Trump administration on the Potter Valley project. This is KMUD News. Starting off with an update on the bentonite spill in southern Humboldt. Today, June 17th, California Water Boards told KMUD News that it is in the process of issuing two emergency cleanup and abatement orders for Redwood Creek and its tributaries. According to the Water Board, in one tributary on Redwood Creek, bentonite slurry collected at depths of up to 2 feet. The tributary to Redwood Creek, with multiple feet of slurry, is considered a Class 2 seasonal wetland habitat that supports amphibians and non-fish aquatic life. This level of slurry accumulation poses a severe risk to wildlife, including possibly suffocating fish due to a lack of oxygen, although that is not fully confirmed. The Water Board also stated they are not aware of any additional bentonite slurry dumping sites in southern Humboldt beyond the Bryceland Road and Meadows Business Park dumping locations. The Water Board will be testing for a variety of contaminants, including if any toxins happen to be present. California Water Boards will also be actively cleaning up the site and removing the bentonite slurry safely. It is important to note that no residents should try to participate in this effort, as the Water Board's cleaning methods may differ as to not disturb the natural habitat. The cleanup and abatement orders also require responsible parties to implement remediation plans. The Water Board will also be testing water quality and its impact on local drinking water supplies. KMUD News had a meeting with the Water Board late this afternoon and will be editing that meeting into an in-depth piece on tomorrow's newscast to give our listeners more information. We highly suggest you tune in to tomorrow's newscast for more information on the bentonite slurry incident. Up next is news on the Potter Valley Project from the organizations behind the Two Basin Solution. Tuesday, the coalition of water agencies, counties, tribes, and conservation organizations behind the Two Basin Solution expressed serious concern over reports that Agriculture Secretary Brooke Rollins convened a meeting with PG&E's chief executive, along with Interior Secretary Doug Burgum and Elsinore Valley's Municipal Water District in Washington, D.C., regarding the future of the Potter Valley Project on the Eel River. The two-basin solution is the product of years of good faith negotiation among the Round Valley Indian Tribes, Sonoma Water, Humboldt County, the Mendocino County Inland Water and Power Commission, California Trout, Trout Unlimited, and the California Department of Fish and Wildlife. The collaborative agreement accommodates PG&E's removal of its aging and uneconomic Eel River dams, facilitates restoration of the Eel River, and builds modern, reliable replacement infrastructure to maintain water supply stability for the Russian River Basin. The two-basin solution partnership includes a sovereign tribal nation that has called the Eel River home since time immemorial. The water agency is responsible for providing reliable water supply to 600,000 people in the Russian River Basin, local county governments, and conservation organizations that have worked for decades to restore fisheries that are important to the region's economy. The proposed plan includes the creation of the new Eel Russian facility, which would allow for the continued diversions of water from the Eel River to the Russian River. The Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, also known as FERC, which oversees PG&E's decommissioning of the project, recently noted in its scoping documents that the new Eel Russian facility is a viable replacement for the aging infrastructure. Round Valley leaders also expressed concern about the U.S. Department of the Interior's involvement in the meeting in Washington, D.C. Noting that there are no Bureau of Reclamation facilities in the area and emphasizing that the department's primary federal responsibility is its trust obligation to tribes, including the Round Valley Indian Tribes. The partnership remains committed to the two-basin solution and will continue engaging with PG&E to ensure the FERC decommissioning process moves forward on its current timeline. on the same issue of ongoing Potter Valley Project negotiations, PG&E offered their own response today. After meeting with Secretary of Agriculture Brooke Rollins and Secretary of the Interior Doug Burgum, stating, on June 15th, PG&E Corporation CEO Patty Poppe met with the Secretary of the Department of Agriculture Rollins, Secretary of the Interior Burgum, and representatives from the Elsinore Valley Municipal Water District. They had a discussion on the Potter Valley Project, the current status, and what lies ahead. PG&E remains committed to working with their current partners as the decommissioning process continues. PG&E goes on to state that PG&E has been and remains open to reviewing and considering any proposal which has broad stakeholder alignment from an entity or entities that have the technical and financial capability to own and operate the dams. Moving on to the continuing saga of the River Lodge Conference Center. In Fortuna, and related to our story yesterday on Fortuna wanting to lease out the River Lodge, the Fortuna Union High School District has submitted a proposal to the City of Fortuna to operate the River Lodge with the goal of expanding educational opportunities for local students while keeping the facility highly accessible to community members and nonprofit organizations. The Fortuna School District intends to manage the facility under a public-to-public partnership, ensuring the River Lodge remains a well-maintained community asset focused on youth development and civic events. The Fortuna District's plan integrates the River Lodge into its long-term educational programming by establishing four key uses for the facility. The first use is community and nonprofit access. The River Lodge would remain a dedicated venue for student activities and local nonprofit organizations throughout the Eel River Valley. The Fortuna Union High School District also plans on maintaining existing relationships with state and local agencies who use the conference center on a regular basis and would look to foster new partnerships to best utilize the venue. The next reason is career technical education. Fortuna Union High School District would utilize the space to develop and host specialized CTE classes, providing local students with hands-on, practical career training. The Fortuna Union High School District also lists the River Lodge as a potential site for a professional development hub. The facility would serve as a central location for educator training and professional development conferences. And finally, the Fortuna Union High School District would like to use the River Lodge for district operations. The River Lodge space would accommodate the Fortuna Union High School District office, optimizing local educational administration. This will be done utilizing existing office space to not detract from the usability of the existing conference center. We'll have to wait and see how the City of Fortuna responds to the Fortuna Union High School District's idea for utilizing the River Lodge Conference Center. Next, we have an update from the Ukiah CHP on the Covelo area Green Bridge collapse. Today, KMO News received a more in-depth report on the Green Bridge collapse event on June 12th. According to CHP, at approximately 6:30 p.m., they were called in response to the incident, where they found a 1973 Blue El Camino as part of the bridge incident and reported no injuries. The driver was reported as Jimmy Sosedo, who is known in the area. However, by 9 p.m. on June 12th, Sosedo needed medical assistance and was taken to the Covelo airfield and airlifted to the Kaiser Hospital in Vacaville. It is not currently reported why he needed medical assistance hours after the Green Bridge collapse incident. More interestingly, we do not currently have confirmation on whether the Green Bridge near Mill Creek in Covelo was struck by the Blue El Camino, or whether the car was simply on the bridge during the collapse. KMO News is actively investigating this story and will let listeners know when we get better confirmation of how the bridge collapse occurred. Next, in southern Humboldt, up on Fruitland Ridge, east of Miranda and Myers Flat, the remains of a woman were found submerged inside a well. An emergency call came in before noon today, June 17th, and it was classified as a medical emergency. First responders confirmed the woman had likely been dead for some time, probably since the previous evening. How and why she ended up in the well is unknown. Although scanner traffic indicated that neighbors reported she had been unwell. It took an extradition team to get the woman's remains out of the well, and the victim has not yet been identified. The well had a water depth of approximately 20 feet. And moving on to in-depth stories from our news team, this is KMUD News. A bee sting during a day of river recreation turned into a serious medical emergency. And KMUD's Lisa Music looks at the small, volunteer-run fire department that got there first.
A 35-year-old man was hiking down to the South Fork of the Ill River in a state park area just south of Myers Flat when a bee sting set off a severe allergic reaction. He had an EpiPen. It just wasn't on him. It was back in his car. By the time he collapsed on the trail, a family member had already run ahead to flag down help.
We had a pretty exciting call at 1:23 today in the state park down by the river, down Robertson Grove, down the river trail. We received a call of a 35-year-old male, unresponsive, bee sting reaction. And so we responded. The call was actually paged out. It said Hidden Springs Campground, which is sort of not really right where it was. So luckily, somebody that knew what was going on flagged us down at the campground and told us where to go, where the incident was. And that's where Amber, my wife, and I go hiking all the time. That's like our trail. So I knew right where it was. So we responded down there and got down to the trail where there his friends were waving us down. And Ember took off with the pack with has EpiPens in it. And she booked it down the trail. I got the rest of our gear all ready and followed her down the trail. And we were the first at scene. He was completely unresponsive. It was very intense.
That's Myers Flat Fire Chief Willow Cernovich. He and the assistant chief, Ember Cernovich, got to the man with epinephrine and oxygen, backed up by two CAL FIRE engines and a city ambulance crew. The first dose of epinephrine didn't bring him around right away. A second one did. From there, crews carried him on a backboard nearly a mile back up the trail to a waiting ambulance.
It was just a really good collaboration of a lot of agencies, you know, CAL FIRE, us, city ambulance, we all work together all the time. Everybody knows everybody. We work well together.
Calls like this one happen often along this stretch of the Avenue of the Giants, where Highway 101 runs right by town. That means Myers Flat Fire isn't just covering its own residents. It's the first line of response for anyone passing through, hikers, campers, drivers, whether they live 2 miles away or 2,000. And it's a department running on a fraction of what a city fire budget looks like.
It's a small district, big issue, responsibility, I guess.
Cernovich says the department recently raised enough money through donations to buy a piece of equipment called a Lucas device, a machine that straps onto a patient's chest and delivers steady chest compressions on its own. He says Myers Flat is now the first department in Southern Humboldt to have one. Research backs up why that matters here specifically. A study simulating CPR during ambulance transport found the device kept compressions more consistent than doing it by hand, especially while a patient is being moved down a riverbank, through brush, or up a trail on a backboard. The American Heart Association doesn't recommend these devices as an everyday replacement for manual CPR, but its newest guidelines do call out exactly this kind of situation, long carries over rough terrain, as one where the device helps.
And we were able to get enough funding that we got the Lucas as well as an extra battery pack. So we got like really everything we needed, including the accessories. We're super thankful to everybody that was more than generous, that were really helping out to make that goal happen.
Myers Flat isn't the only department trying to catch up. Earlier this year, 10 volunteer fire departments across Southern Humboldt and Mendocino counties received new fire trucks funded through $2 million secured by State Senator Mike McGuire. Piercy Fire Captain Andrew Cardoza, whose department got one of those engines, said departments like his lean on each other constantly. In his words, it's a good feeling to help support neighboring fire departments whenever they can. Cernovitz, who has his own bee allergy, had one more piece of advice for anyone heading out on the trails this summer.
So if you are allergic to bees in any way, bring one with you wherever you go. Keep one in the car. And I'm actually myself allergic to bees. And so I have EpiPens as well as some Benadryl, chewable Benadryl. And I take those in my kit.
Cernovitz and Ember are often the first faces someone in trouble sees out here, but there's a way to see them that doesn't involve an emergency call. Every Saturday from 11 to 3, Myers Flat Fire runs a hamburger barbecue in town to help cover the cost of gear. By Cernovitz's account, it takes 132 hamburgers sold to pay for one pair of turnout pants and 56 hamburgers sold to cover a helmet. One burger at a time, that's how a department this small keeps showing up. Reporting for KMUN News, I'm Lisa Music.
Helicopter operations over southern Humboldt cannabis farms are being questioned, and the Board of Supervisors has been asked to answer them. Daniel Mintz reports.
Recalling a past era of aerial surveillance, enforcement-oriented helicopter flights are hovering over southern Humboldt cannabis farms once again, and the Board of Supervisors has been asked to look into it. The helicopter doing the operations is owned by a private organization that partners with Northern California law enforcement agencies, and it was questioned during the public comment period of the June 16th supervisors meeting. The private sector-funded group, the Northern California Coalition to Safeguard Communities, or NCCSC, has given grants to the Humboldt County Sheriff's Office for a variety of positions. According to a detailed report published in the Redheaded Black Belt news site, the Sheriff's Office got a supervisor's approved grant of over $500,000 for the year that ends this July. The focus of enforcement is said to be labor exploitation and human trafficking. But that was questioned by Ross Gordon of the Humboldt County Growers Alliance. Like other speakers, he asked supervisors to review the enforcement.
And so I want to echo the request to agendize this for a future meeting in terms of a review of NorCal Coalition's activities and funding. And also want to add that I think a useful piece of information to bring to that meeting would be data from the NorCal Coalition about the extent of labor violations and other violations that are being tracked by the coalition. Have seen consistent messaging coming out of the coalition, including the article published in Kim Kemp the other day that, for example, labor violations have gotten worse since we have legalization. That would definitely be a surprise from our perspective. And I think that's something which would be really helpful to really have a conversation grounded in data in terms of what exactly is the scope of the problem, where is that problem geographically located, and how does that relate to the sorts of tactics and approach that are being used.
Gordon said the black helicopter over Soham brings to mind, quote, tactics that for a lot of folks are evocative of the war on drugs, and it's the type of law enforcement approach that we're hoping we would be able to move past 10 years into a legal and licensed market. Willow Creek resident Riley Morrison suggested the helicopter surveillance is disrespectful to lawful farmers.
The helicopter operations in southern Humboldt last week struck a nerve with a lot of people, myself included. Almost immediately, I started getting calls and messages from the community asking what was going on. People were concerned, confused, and in many cases, frustrated. The sight of a black enforcement helicopter repeatedly circling rural properties brought back memories that many in our community would rather leave behind. What stood out to me was that many of the people who felt targeted or alarmed were not bad actors. They were legal cannabis operators, family, and rural residents who had spent years working through this regulation, permits, inspections, and taxes to do things the right way. They invested an enormous amount of time and effort and money to be part of this regulated system. When they see this kind of operation, it doesn't build confidence, it creates anxiety, creates question and reinforces feelings that no matter how much effort people make to comply, they're still viewed with suspicion.
He asked for, quote, a review of the program's effectiveness, cost, impact on community trust, and plans for future funding requests. Southern Humboldt resident and cannabis farm worker Sarah Shipley said cannabis farming is, quote, the most heavily regulated agricultural business in California. And she said the justification for and the funding of the helicopter operations should be publicly explained.
So I want to ask this board why the NCCSC helicopter N487HB has been conducting repeated aerial surveillance over licensed farms in Southern Humboldt, including on June 10th of this year. This is not what that program is supposed to be doing. By HCSO's own description, the marijuana enforcement team investigates unlicensed operations. Circling permitted farms accomplishes nothing except harassment of legal businesses, their employees, their neighbors, and their livestock. And it's worth asking who is behind this program and why. The NCCSC is funded entirely by the Howard G. Buffett Foundation. Howard Buffett has used his foundation's money to block cannabis dispensaries in Illinois and to effectively purchase influence over a sheriff's office in Arizona. An Illinois police training official was fired after improperly granting Buffett a law enforcement certification following millions in donations. That is who is paying for surveillance of legal farms in this county. I'm asking the board to place this on an agenda and provide the public with answers.
Supervisors usually don't respond to public comment on items not on the regular agenda, and they didn't in this case. In Eureka for KMUD News, this is Daniel Mintz.
Next, a story from our friends at KPFA. On arguments over California's state budget.
Governor Gavin Newsom laid out his revised budget in May, breaking down new investments and proposed cuts. Newsom touted his budget's focus on education and the continued expansion of state funding.
Well, you can see here under the formula, under Prop 98, and our ongoing commitment beyond 98 to education, significant increases in our TK through 12 education funding. Put that in perspective. When I got here, we were about $17,000 per pupil. Now it's over $28,282 per student, 66% increase.
Newsom's optimism for his budget's education mindset was not shared by the California Teachers Association, which fears the state budget will withhold voter-approved funding adopted in Proposition 98. They claim Newsom will withhold $3.9 billion in an effort to expand California's Rainy Day Fund. David Goldberg, the president of the California Teachers Association, had a sharp rebuke for the state legislature and governor, quote, follow the law, stop with the gimmicks and the shell games, and fully fund our schools, end quote. Newsom found common ground with the assembly on proposed business tax changes and extensions. Newsom's proposal aims to ease tax burdens for local, small, and startup businesses by halving the yearly LLC tax. At the same time, the proposal means to cap tax credits for corporations, increasing state revenue.
We're going to cut the LLC S-Corp tax, that annual $800 tax, for an estimated 250,000 businesses down to $400. That's also proposed in this budget, helping support startups, small businesses, and then try to level the playing field with big corporations by simply capping the tax at $5 million or 50% of their liability.
The Assembly's budget proposal aligns with Newsom on business taxes, though some Republican state senators voiced their dissent. In Monday's Senate budget hearing, Republican Senator Stephen Chue of Irvine was forceful in his critique of the budget.
The supermajority claims that this budget is balanced, but that claim is simply not true. This budget assumes revenues that are approximately $5 billion higher than previous projections and relies on future tax increases that will make California even less affordable and families affordable for the families and the businesses.
Newsom and the Assembly have work to do ahead of the June 30th deadline when the state's fiscal year ends. Their proposed budgets are vast in scope and provide ample opportunity for disagreements. both sides search for a way to correct the nearly $50 billion budget deficit, which was a $97 billion surplus just 2 years ago. One main obstacle is the $50 Medi-Cal healthcare premium for undocumented immigrants, a rise from 2025's agreed-upon $30. Newsom defended his proposal, citing that low-end premiums for covered California are $46, all as a result of President Donald Trump's Big Beautiful Bill, which has reduced federal funding to the state. Newsom claims these cuts and rising healthcare costs are in service of balancing the state's budget, but those in opposition fear thousands may lose healthcare coverage if Newsom's cuts make it into the finalized agreement. Healthcare advocates have also voiced concerns over Newsom's proposed cuts to long-term care for older residents and those with disabilities. They claim cuts to in-home supportive services will put severe economic strain on already at-risk populations and further the unaffordability crisis. Newsom acknowledged that his budget has reduced spending initiatives, but says that it is important for California to be fiscally responsible in a volatile federal landscape.
No big, new, ongoing investments. We can't afford to do that right now. We need to tighten that belt, and we need to focus, and I'll get to efficiencies and outcomes.
As he heads into the final 6 months of his governorship, Newsom says he wants this budget to lead the state into a balanced economic future.
This is a two-year budget. I'm not just trying to get out of Dodge and enjoy 6 months of the next governor saying, well, I left you a balanced budget. This is a balanced budget structurally for the next 18 months after I'm gone.
State Assembly members will have their say as they begin negotiations with Newsom over cuts and investments before both sides reach an agreed-upon final budget by the end of this month. For KPFA News, I'm Cade Young.
That's all for our news broadcast. Thanks for listening. Thanks to our rotation of broadcast engineers, Dennis Marr, Katie Phillips, Bianna Federico, Michael McCaskill, Larry Lashley, and Javier Rodriguez. Also thanks to our reporters for this broadcast, Daniel Mintz and Lisa Music. KMA News is online. You can now find us on streaming platforms, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify. You can download our stories and newscasts for offline listening. You can also follow us on social media at KMA News, including Facebook and Instagram. Do you have issues important to you that deserve more attention? Are there stories we're missing or that you're curious about? You can give us a call at 707-923-2605 or send an email to news@kma.org. Redwood Community Radio Incorporated is funded by Press Forward, the national movement to strengthen communities by reinvigorating local news. Learn more at pressforward.news. Redwood Community Radio acknowledges that its transmitter sites are located in the unceded territory of the Sikyone, Wailaki, Wiat, Wilcut, and Kato people. We honor ancestors past, present, and emerging and acknowledge the ongoing cultural, spiritual, and physical connections that these tribes have to the region. I'm April Lewis. Stay tuned in.